Well, welcome home to you guys, too. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's true. That's true. But memento mori, that's the Latin phrase there that he was talking about. Speaking of welcome home and the men's retreat, we had 93 guys that were up on the mountain. 25 of those were from Oklahoma and New Mexico, a couple other churches that joined us. The other 60-some were from here. And there are several of you out here. So if you went to the men's retreat, would you stand up? Yeah, really? There we go. Very good. Very good. Yeah. And one of those guys was baptized in the very, very cold pond down out there. And was it cold?
It was cold.
It was cold, yeah. Yeah. Paul went down and did the temperature after you guys left. It was 40 degrees. So, yes, it was cold. Yeah. And my friend Paul is just nuts because he likes to go down and then just see how long he can endure it. And I'm the smart one. I don't do that. Well, as I said, and as she said, welcome home. Last week, we started our series called Welcome Home, and we are looking at different spaces and places in our house. And last week, it was the front porch, and so John McMeans from Refugee Language Project was here and brought the message, and I've heard good things from that, and he kind of set the stage for it. Well, now we're gonna move into the house. Today, we're going to move into the living room, and so as we do that, I need some help here. Evan, can you help me? Okay, no? You
yes.
Don't? Okay, yes. Okay, good. Okay, I need you to take this rubber band, and I just need you to stretch it. You can stretch it with your hand or your thumbs, however. Okay, then just hold it. I'll tell you when to let go. Okay. I'll come back here in a little bit and check on you, okay? Yeah, don't hit Mason. Okay. I will have to say that home is one of my favorite words. I just love the term home. It gives me what my daughter Anna would say. It gives me the feels. When something feels good, she goes, oh, that gives me the feels. And home is one of those words for me. I've always liked home. Home has always been it's always been a special place. It's been a comfortable place. I remember when I was in college, coming home from Joplin, or when we lived up in southeast Kansas or southwest Missouri or northeast Oklahoma, always coming that direction, I-44 down, and on the Turner Turnpike, you get about the last 5 miles, you come up, crest up over this hill, and you can see the lights of Oklahoma City. It was home. Yeah. I know for many of you, Oklahoma doesn't sound like home, but it was, yeah. And about another 25, 30 minutes from there would be the point when I got to Mom and Dad's there in Bethany and walking in that front door. They moved there the year before I was born. In fact, I always say they bought it in 63, celebrated, and I was born in 64. I don't know if that's right, but that home was just special. It was a place that I called home. Now, Canyon has been my home. I've lived there longer than anywhere else, 21 years now. And probably, I guess it would be that wherever Melinda is my home. I steal that from my son-in-law, as he said that about my daughter. And I thought, I like that. I'm going to use it. If you're listening, Melinda, and watching on that little screen, she's out at the desk out there. So as we gather, we're going to be in Mark chapter 6 this morning. And I want us, as I told you, we're going to come into the living room. The living room is often the place where we might come down, sit, relax, have a conversation. It might be where we grab a little nap on the couch. For many of you, it is where we do our supper and we grab our food and go sit in front of the TV. But this morning, I want us to just sit a while and have a conversation in the living room. And in Mark chapter 6, I'm going to read just three verses here. It's going to set the stage for where we go this morning. Mark chapter 6, verse 30. The apostles gathered together with Jesus, and they reported to him all that they had done and taught. And he, meaning Jesus, said to them, "Come away by yourselves to a secluded place and rest a while." for there were many people coming and going, and they did not even have time to eat. And they went away in a boat to a secluded place by themselves. Let's pray. Lord, this morning, I pray that it is your breath in my lungs that speaks through me. May I speak your words, and may your voice be heard in their ears. And Lord, may we in this moment just pause. May we just take a moment, take a break, and rest a while and hear from you. It's through Jesus we pray. Amen. So, what is going on here in John chapter 6? Well, earlier in the chapter, it tells us that Jesus has sent the 12 out, and they go to some surrounding villages and cities in that area, and they preach and teach. And then they're given the ability, Jesus gives the ability to heal people as they pray for them, and they cast out demons, things that they have not done before, but now Jesus sends them out without him and allows them to do this, and they come back psyched from this trip. Well, we don't know if this happened right then, but this is where a couple of the Gospels recount also what happened is that John the Baptist, the cousin of Jesus, has died. So when they get back and they meet up with Jesus, Jesus says this, come away with me by yourselves to a secluded place and rest a while. Now, we don't know if Jesus, we know Jesus knows a lot of things, but in his body and his physical body and being man, does he know everything that's happening right next because he's limited a little bit at the moment? But if he was to know, then he also understands that, hey, what's about to come, not only what's been, but what about to come is further need for their rest, and because what's next is what we call the feeding of the 5,000, which, according to Matthew, it's well above 5,000. That was just the men, not counting women and children, so they estimate this could be about 15,000 people. So they come off this emotional high, and Jesus, in his emotional low, finding out about John, and some of those 12 of Jesus' followers were followers of John even before Jesus. And here they are. Jesus says, hey, come away with me. Need for this. Stop. Let's rest. Let's pause for a little bit. Let's sit down. Jesus is, I believe, saying that to you to do today. But we have a couple of problems to get in the way. First problem. John Ortberg writes a book called The Life You've Always Wanted. And in it, he's got a particular chapter about this particular problem. And in it, he starts the chapter by saying this. I went to a friend of mine who I, and he deemed as his kind of a spiritual mentor, a guy he went to for wise advice. And he said, I am struggling because I feel like I'm just so busy with things and my calendar is full and there's just a lot of needs to be met. What do I do? Grabs out his pen and paper, grabs his notebook, and the guy tells him, okay, John, you must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life. John quickly writes that down. Yeah. And he looks back up. He goes, okay, now what? And the guy just sits there for a moment and just stares at him. And he's like, okay, I've got it written down. Now what? And the guy says, you must ruthlessly eliminate hurry. And he goes, yeah, I got that written down. And what's the next thing? And the guy finally just said, kind of shaking his head, that's it. And he finally got it. Title of that chapter is, if I remember correctly, I think it was hurry sickness, or at least that's what he calls it, a hurry sickness. The Red Queen in Alice in Wonderland says this. Now here you see, it takes all the running that you can do to keep in the same place. If you want to get somewhere else, you must run twice as fast as that. Do you ever feel like you're running in place and you're getting nowhere? You think you're running places, but when you look around, you find that you went nowhere and it feels like you're just running in place. And if you're going to get anywhere, you have to go twice as fast. That's how some of us live our lives. Always churning out, but not churning out things, just churning out time, and life goes by and we are more and more tired, more and more in need of rest. Somehow we are drawn to hurry. I think it makes us feel important. We like to hear that people notice that we're busy. Kind of gives us kudos a little bit, because if we're busy, it means we're doing something. And if we're doing something, nobody will think we're lazy because we're busy doing something. Now, what did you accomplish? I don't know, but we at least were busy doing something. And that's how often we live our lives. Peter Kreeft, another author, says this: if you can't take time to do nothing, you are a slave to doing. Doing nothing is a radical, revolutionary act. It frees you from the universal slavery of our age, slavery to the clock. The clock measures doing, but not being. Some of you love the clock. You check the clock often. You have something on your wrist that measures time and tells you. Here's the thing about clocks. They often tell us how far behind we are, which only adds to the stress of our lives because we didn't get something done as quickly as possible. I'm going to diagnose us for a minute by asking a few questions. See how you answer these things to see if maybe you, like myself, often have this thing called hurry sickness. Question one, are you constantly speeding up activities? My family and I, we do these little New York Times puzzle things. We always submit it when we do a time, and I have a goal that it's always under a minute to do the little mini crossword. And if I don't beat it, I hate it. When we went to New Mexico years ago, we were taking those trips and building houses for people. Every year, we always look back to what we did the prior years to see if we could beat our time, not in minutes and seconds, but at what point of day are we done on this particular day. And if we get that done, then we've got time to then go play over by the Gulf Coast a little bit. If we don't, then we can't. And if there were two different groups, we were always measuring our time based on the other group because we always had to be faster than them. And there was always this competition. Yeah, that's fun and it's good. Some people, that's all they know how to do. I have an alter ego. He's always with me when I'm out and about. And when I'm in Walmart, he's there. When I go to the line, if I go to the bank, if I'm driving down Georgia and a stoplight stops us cars, he's in the other car. Because I get in a particular lane, the lane in which I think is going to be the fastest. In my alter ego, he is directed to go to the lane that I might have been in. And so I know which vehicle and what color that vehicle is or which person it is in that other line. And then there is this competition that happens quietly that nobody else is aware of, but I am. And which one gets to the destination first. If I get through this line before my alter ego, then I feel much better. I'm like, okay, I chose right. Do I have hurry sickness? Yeah. Some of you might do the same thing, and some of you are going, Lenny, you're nuts. No wonder you got anxiety. Question number two, how often do you multitask? We all think that we multitask well. And some will say, oh, women multitask much better than men. I don't think anybody really multitasks that well. We still try to do it, But do we do it that well? We even go take walks because we need some fresh air and we need a breather, and we go out and then we grab our phone and then we talk to somebody. And in my neighborhood, this one lady, she holds it out here and just talks to them like this. I see people talking all the time. I'm going to wave to my neighbors, but they can't wave back because they're on their phone. Yeah. Sometimes we're doing that plus doing business because, hey, we can kill two or three birds with one stone. Some people go and they walk and they've got their kid with them and they're on the phone. They're not present with whoever they're with. Maybe you guys have done that. You're both walking and you're both talking to somebody else. See that in restaurants all the time. Imagine what people can do in a car and all the things that they can do. Yeah. I've even known a lady who can who could change clothes driving from work to the softball game, the church softball game, after work, and change all the way there. Sorry, Mom, but she's been gone for a while and she can't do anything to me. Number three, is your desk. Yeah. It was another time. Everything was slower. We could do those things. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure she did it with her seatbelt on and her helmet. Yeah. Yeah. Is your desk your house, your office, or your mind? Is it full of clutter? No, it's not clutter. Those piles, they're organized. I know where things are if they're on my desk, not in the file, then I won't be able to find it. I know where everything is. Sometimes that disorganization, that mess, creates more stress in our lives, but we've just learned to live with it, and we learn to deal with it because that's just how we do it. Question four, are you superficial? Before you answer too quick, think about this. Do you listen to other people? Hey, I'm talking to you. Yeah, yeah. Have you been told that before when they're talking and you're not paying attention? Here's the second part of it. How about your relationships? Are they skin deep? Yeah. Just got back from the men's retreat that we talked about. Men are notorious for not always being deep. Many guys will tell me, you know, Lenny, I don't have that close of a friend. And if we don't have that close of a friend, and if our spouse is not that close to where we can share, a lot of times we never get to know somebody deep enough. Nor do we allow somebody in to go deep enough with us. So these questions kind of diagnose us a little bit to whether or not we have hurry sickness and to what degree. Is it stage one, two, three, or four? People in a hurry never have time for recovery. This is a man by the name of Archibald Hart, who wrote a book called Adrenaline and Stress, and then another book called The Anxiety Cure. He says this, people in a hurry never have time for recovery. Their minds have little time to meditate and pray so that problems can be put in perspective. In short, people in our age are showing signs of physiological disintegration because we are living at a pace that is too fast for our bodies. Even our theme at the Ironman retreat, Memento Mori, Remember Your Death, is designed to take a moment to pause and to consider, as Stephen Covey would say, put eternity in mind. Begin at the end. Sometimes that pauses us a little bit so that we can put things in perspective and keep things in the right priorities. The faster we go, Hart would say, the less we become. That's problem number one. Problem number two is marginless living. I read the book by Richard Swenson called Margin back when I was a youth minister in NOAA, and I was on a trip to go see my friend up in Indiana, and I took the book on the plane. It was after that trip and after reading that book that I no longer wore a watch. Came back to camp, and it broke in a basketball game, and I just didn't get it fixed. I said, you know what? I'm not wearing a watch. I haven't worn one since. And then it's been about 30 years. But Richard Swenson, who was a doctor, a medical doctor, realized that part of the problems that we have in our society is people live with no margin. Hey, Evan, how's the rubber band? Still there? How's it going?
Good.
Yeah. Okay. We're coming closer to this. He writes this one particular chapter in the book. There's all these different pains, and there's all these different places of margin in our lives that we don't have. Could be in our finances. We live beyond what we make. We have no emotional energy left because we're always at a frantic pace, and we can't handle when one more thing, because the straw that broke the camel's back is that one more thing that just sends us over the edge, and we're always waiting for that next straw. Physically, we're just going and going and exhausted. Our calendars are full, and then some. And this one particular chapter is called The Pain of Progress. And I think we get this one a little bit, because it's just gotten worse since he wrote the book. Because it's this idea of technology that just is supposed to enable us to do things quicker and have more leisure time and more freedom and more time to relax has only brought more pressure, has brought more stuff, more pain. In fact, Randy Frazee will say this: the ones who have more actually have more with which to destroy themselves. Sometimes the more stuff that we have and the little toys that we have, the very things that are supposed to make our life easier, are the very things that make our life a little more miserable. We like them and they're good, and at the same time, we wish we could get away from them because of the bad parts. But we have a hard time because of the good things. We know what it's like to live a little stressed out in the world. There's a lot of contemporary stressors. Change is always changing. It seems to be happening faster and faster and faster all the time. Don't know how to deal with it. Mobility. We are more mobile than we've ever been, and it's been happening more and more, and we can go at faster and faster speeds. And I've learned this. At one time, 55 seemed fast. Then 70 seemed fast, and then you get, and that sounds fast. Yeah, yeah. I paid him $20 to do that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, good timing. Yeah, we live because we're angry, we're frustrated, we're overloaded. We're stressed, and part of that is when all of these stresses will come, and stress is stress. Sometimes, well, it's a good stress versus a bad stress, but guess what? They're all stressful. That was a good wedding. Man, I'm wore out, and I got sick afterwards. Why? Because you spent a whole lot of time, you didn't get enough rest, and you expended a lot of your energy, and if you don't have some margin built in, we don't handle it very well. We're not designed to. So, lack of margin. If we don't have it in our emotional energy and our physical energy, if we don't have it in our time, if we don't have it in our finances, that pocketbook, then we are like a rubber band that is stretched all the time. And a rubber band that's stretched all the time, after you've stretched it out, I would say stretch it all the way, but it would bust Mason toes. Don't do that. But what happens if you live your life this way? You have nowhere else to go. The rubber band is already stretched. And after a while, the rubber band will start to lose its elasticity. Rubber bands are meant to stretch, but they're meant to come back when they're done. And if they stay stretched all the time, they will eventually break. And that's how some of us live our lives. We live our lives like that rubber band. One day you'll get it even more than you do now, Evan, when you got all the pressures that your mom and dad do have. Yeah. We live our lives like that. Let's go back to Mark chapter 6. Jesus says this. Not yet. Come away, Jesus says. They didn't have even time to eat. Some of you have those days, don't you? You're busy, you forgot to eat lunch. Now, some of you are going, I'd never forget lunch. Yeah. But some of you get so busy, wrapped up doing all these things. And Jesus says for a minute, come away. He doesn't say, go away, get away to the 12. He says, come away. Offers him to come away with him. Hey, let's get away for a little bit. He will say over in Matthew, come to me, all of you who are weary, heavy burdened. I will give you rest. So he says, come away to these 12. And then he says this, by yourselves. If all of us were just to get away, hey, let's not go, and we're still with everybody. Sometimes we need space. And that come away by yourselves is not always just by yourself, but sometimes it is by yourself. You will need that space. Jesus is saying it to the 12, and so the 13 of them are going to get away from the crowd and the everything else that's going on. So he says, let's get away. But maybe it's your wife and you. You get away for the weekend, for the night, for the, you know. Maybe you just go out to the park. Maybe you just go down to the canyon and go do a little hike. Just to get away and to hear the quiet. Maybe hear the birds. Come away by yourselves to a secluded place. To a place that's not where everybody else is. To a place that's deserted. A place where you don't have to invest in all the people that are around you. A place where you can just think. Come away by yourselves to a secluded place. This is what it says. They went away. That last verse, 32. They went away in a boat to a secluded place by themselves. They went away, and Jesus said, come away. They went to a secluded place because Jesus said, come away to a secluded place. It says they went away by themselves. And Jesus said, come away by yourselves to a secluded place. But Jesus said, and rest a while. Interesting. It doesn't say, and they rested. For you see what happens in this, they get in the boat. By the time they get to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, the crowd sees them out there on the Sea of Galilee and sees where they're going, and they hightail it around that lake, seeing where they're going to go. And as soon as they land, what happens is what we know as the feeding of the 5,000. And that was a long day, so much so that Jesus taught and the crowd came, and they didn't have lunch either, and Jesus fed them, and you know it's going to take a while to feed all those people and pass that all around. And as the day is coming to a close, they've already come from this and needed to get away, and now can't you imagine how much more they need to get away? And this reminds me that there will always be disturbances and always be challenges and always be obstacles and hindrances to you even trying to get away. Something will always come up. There's a need that might arise. And even after the feeding of the 5,000, Jesus sends them off in a boat again. And Jesus disperses the crowd. And then he comes walking on the water and then scares the 12. They get in the boat and they're at the shore. And what do they find? More people who are there wanting help. There will always be the needy crowd, the needy kids, the needy, you fill in the blank. Sometimes there are emergencies. Sometimes there are things we need to deal with. Sometimes it's the wisdom to know when to and when not. But there will always be challenges, which means you will have to be intentional about your coming away. Spending time with Jesus, coming away with him. So in these last few moments, let me just give you some practical ideas of how we might overcome this hurry sickness, how we might spend our time wisely, that we have some margin in building that in, how we might slow down. Here's the first one, drive in the slow lane. It's amazing how, when you can do that, how it takes a little bit of pressure off. Some of you, just me saying that, you're cringing a little. Well, you would never drive in the slow lane. Why would you, anybody ever drive in the slow lane? I will have to tell you, I hate it, this traffic between Amarillo and Canyon, now that they've put up all of these barriers and all that kind of stuff. I've had to slow down, been forced to slow down. In fact, I drive on that side road because I don't like those cement barricades. My claustrophobia doesn't like it very well. But I have found that I've been driving slower lately. And I'm getting better gas mileage too, by the way. Yeah. Build in margins. Find a way in some of these areas just to build in a little bit more time. Maybe spend a little less than you make. We have a way to just spend everything we got. Spend a little less. We tend to fill up the calendar. Maybe buffers, put in some buffers in your appointment schedules, time between. Here's one. Speak more slowly. Some of you are in such a hurry that you're just always talking fast. And some of you who do that can't stand it when somebody speaks slow, and you try to finish their sentences. I will tell you this, we hate it. Yeah, yeah. Eat slower. Now, some of you will say, you know what, but I was in the military, and we only had so much time, we had to eat really fast. Or I work at a school, and we only get this much time, we got to eat really fast. And I get that. I understand those times. But when you don't have to, can you eat just a little slower? Or maybe just spend a little bit extra time at the table. And some of you are staring, we don't eat at the table. We're in the living room. Yeah, around the TV. Maybe just spend a little bit more time in conversation with the people that you're with and around. Be present with others. When you're with them, be with them. Listen to them. Linger and have the conversation. Take a vacation day from your vacation days. I hear so often people will say, oh, I need a vacation from my vacation. And they don't, because they left as soon as they got off work on Friday and they came back the evening before they had to go back to work. And now, if your vacation is full of rest, that's one thing, but many people fill their vacations up. If you have a vacation, build in some rest. And lastly, come away with Jesus regularly. Take some time, and it won't happen by accident. You're going to have to build it in the schedule. You're going to have to make time for it. Jesus will patiently wait. He waits for us because he wants that time with us, but he doesn't force it. So come away with me, he will say. And here's my concern. Many of you will say, that's me. Yeah, you've hit it. I've kind of got some of those things, and that's the case. And you will walk out of here and go back to your harried and hurried world, and nothing will change. That is, nothing will change until one day you're forced to. Because that's kind of a law of nature. One day things will force you to change if you don't, in any of those arenas. And you have the breakdowns, or your body gets sick and doesn't recover for something. You got too many debt notices that come over. You're facing bankruptcy or other things in all of these areas because we didn't build margins in our lives. We didn't take time to rest. We didn't slow down just a little bit. We didn't come away with Jesus enough. So this morning, I'm going to encourage you that you come away before you come apart. Many people have lost their lives. They've lost their families. They've lost their faith. They've lost their minds because they've never done this. I'm going to close with these words by Archibald Hart one more time. He says this, "We're designed to finish the race, not win it." We think that we have to win the race when all we got to do is finish. So go at a speed. Go at a speed that allows you to finish the race and to finish it well. And to finish it when you should and not 10 years too soon. Yeah. Remember, we were probably built more for camel speed. But technology has allowed us to go faster. Just sometimes we don't handle it so well. You don't got to win the race. You just got to finish. Let's finish well. So for the next 30 seconds to a minute, I'm just going to, it's going to be quiet. You can pray, you can ponder, you can contemplate. Just sit in the silence and rest just for a moment. Lord, 30 seconds is not enough, really. But thank you for quiet. Help us to seek those times a little more often. May we find our rest in you. Lord, I pray that if there's somebody here who's never actually come to you, may they come and find rest for their souls. Lord, grant us grace when we find ourselves just too hurried, when we find ourselves burning the candle at both ends. Help us to learn how to slow down and to be in your presence and to be present with others. May we be more like you, Jesus. It's in his name we pray. Amen. Before you go, Evan, you can do this with the rubber band now. There you go. And you can keep it as a memento to this. Yes. Yeah. And now don't fight over it. Yeah. Okay. Well, I pray that this day is a day and that you kind of contemplate that somewhere throughout the day, be reminded, oh yeah, need to rest a little bit more. Might need to slow down. And on your way out, take the slow way home. Yeah, we'll see you all later. Bye.